It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. But that's a lot of drum loop. Sorry about that. Hey, it's Moran Monday. I was Moraning. This is The Horn. This program is live the 31st day of July, 2023. The final day of July, and I'm ready for it. It's been a month, you know, it really has. And we'll get into that later. But, yeah, hi, I'm Robin. And, when you go looking for the program, if, say, you're listening to the podcast or something, and you're not getting it at headon.live, that's the easiest place to get it. If you are listening to the podcast, please, as so many of you do, and True Blue Digit, thank you very kindly, liking and subscribing and leaving notes algorithms to read. Thank you so much. But, yes, a new week dawns, and July comes to a close with this program. And if you'd like to be part of the Merry Wacky Zany real-time madcap multimedia extravaganza that is the Horn Chat Room, pop on by headon.live, and you will be greeted by the early arrivers, Ralphs and Squeaky and Theo. Now, don't y'all let me down. Anybody comes in, you got to greet them and make them feel welcome, okay? I know, you always do. And incapably moderated by yours truly. Who is rather unpleasantly warm at the moment. We're edging toward 80 degrees here in the fabulous Horn Studio at the magnificent Kincaid Mansions. Seriously, thanks. Whether you listen live or listen to the podcast, thank you for being part of this really quite remarkable little community. It never ceases to amaze me that this has been going on for almost 20 years. I'm sorry, I'm multitasking. We'll get things rolling in just a second. Okay. So, every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. And so, as a consequence, we say thank you to any subscribers we had for the 29th, the 30th, and the 31st. And that means thank you to Dave and the Blind. Thank you so much. Thanks as well to Cecilia jumping in Thank you very kindly indeed. And thank you to Larry. Thank you, Larry, so very much. Larry in Maryland. We had substantial progress on closing the gap on our fundraising deficit for the end of the month. And so as a result, and thank you again to Brandon and Fennell in Brooklyn. So taken all together, that means we are now down to $1,475 to finish the month of July fully funded. That seems highly unlikely, but still, thank you for getting us that close. And I should note that our dear friend Kat in Ohio has a Have a Show on Me challenge, a $300 Have a Show on Me challenge is on the table. It's the Mitch Retire and Go Home to the Kentucky Mansion and Tend to the Garden challenge. I would like to associate myself with Kat's remarks. That's what they say in hoity-toity joints like the Senate. And so if that challenge should happen to be met this evening, which would be wonderful, we would get down to, goodness me, $775, which means really close to fully funded for the month of July. And not a Friday on the Front Porch community-made miracle, but a community-made miracle for the whole blessed month. Thank you, Kat. Thank you so very much. It makes a humongous difference. It truly does. So, this was a kind of, I don't want to get too, thank you, Ralphs, getting us started on Kat's Mitch McConnell Go Home to the Mansion in Kentucky and Tend Your Garden challenge. There is $275 to go on that now. Thank you, Ralphs. Thank you. Yeah, it was a tough weekend for me. I'm not trying to make it about me or anything, but transphobia hurts. And it hurts a lot when it's within your own family. I'll leave it at that, but it has been a brutal few days. And so I spent the day sort of trying to perk myself up and pick myself up. Kind of sat in the dark and ate ice cream all weekend. Kidding. There wasn't that much ice cream. But just the same, it was a little rough. And I'm looking forward to a new week and a new month and just generally sort of recalibrating, if you know what I mean. But that having been said, we have more In this era, there are more ends available every day. And so, lo and behold, the latest guy to be indicted, Olivetta, thank you, Flavio. Well, he showed up in court today, but it's not quite what you might have hoped it would have been. Carlos de Oliveira showed up, but was not arraigned. And Judge Aileen Cannon is not knocking anybody's socks off with her legal acumen. So that's going to be, I think the formal arraignment isn't going to happen until next month. He was released on bond, on a bond of $100,000 today. And the whole thing is going to be a game of delay, delay, fail, if Nitwit Nero has anything to do with it. Special Counsel Jack Smith filed a notice with Alien Cannon saying any new filing shouldn't disturb the schedule and that his team was taking steps to ensure that it does not do so, according to Bloomberg. Noting he would promptly turn over evidence relating to the new charges. And suggested she not screw around with the scheduling of the trial. Oh, thank you, Chris. Chris just jumped in and took us down to 265 to go on Cast Challenge. The Town of 24 Bars is a great instrumental piece. Thanks, Roman. I'm glad I could help. I'm glad I actually learned the name of that song. I'm glad you enjoy it. But as we've been saying all along, it looks like things are getting hot. Fonnie Willis down in Fulton County, Georgia, has said they've pretty much done their work. They're ready to roll. And then a Georgia judge, because, two Fridays ago we were talking about Georgia trial court judges? Well, in this case, Robert McBurney, who was ostensibly removed or conflicted out by the chief judge of that judicial circuit, issued an opinion in which he actually put a few rounds across Trump's bow, writing in his opinion, refusing to grant his Nitwit Nero's attempt to block Fonnie Willis from doing her damn job. But McBurney went on and said, well, I think this is fancy legal language for saying this here is what we call a grift, y'all. For some, being the subject of criminal investigation can, a la Rumpelstiltskin, be turned into golden political capital, making it seem more providential than problematic. And went on to take Trump down for trying to stop Fonnie Willis when she doesn't even have an indictment. At least, not that anyone publicly knows about. McBurney wrote, guessing at what that picture might look like before the investigative dots are connected may be a popular game for the media and blogosphere, but it is not a proper role for the courts in formal legal argumentation. Ooh, that stings. That's basically saying that the lawyers suck. And then finally, he went after the lawyers, McBurney did, Judge McBurney, referring to their complaints as rather overwrought allegations of prosecutorial overreach and judicial error, which do not suffice to show that there is a significant risk of wrongful indictment. And of course, if the indictment is in fact wrongful, that can be handled on a post-indictment basis. That's what motions to quash and motions to dismiss are all about. But then again, if we were expecting Nitwit Nero's lawyers to be particularly good, well, no, I don't think so. These are pettifoggers and grifters. And as I noted, Fonnie Willis has said she is ready to go. And that her work, her grand jury's investigation, is concluded. But it's more in Monday. And so I think we need some true, straight up, no kidding, more in content here to begin the program. Hence, we have an appearance by Joe Rogaine. Because Joe Rogaine has been blathering on for years now, saying that the feds manipulated January 6th. And barks and grunts and hoops, Ray Epps, Ray Epps, Ray Epps. Saying that Ray Epps clearly instigated the domestic terrorist attack on the Capitol. What's interesting, though, is that, as Pink Shrek said,
the January 6th thing is bad, but also the intelligence agencies were involved in provoking people into the Capitol building. That's a fact.
No, that's a fantasy, Pink Shrek. And your brains are made of bacon grease, buddy. The thing is, though, he went on to say, Joe Rogaine did,
I don't know, but I do know.
Yeah, because that, remember, that's their M.O. The Joe Rogaines of the world are just asking questions.
We're just asking questions, man. They're just asking questions.
In other words, J.A.Q., they're jacking off.
I don't know. But I do know that every other person who was involved in January 6th, who was involved in coordinating a break-in into the Capitol and then instigating people, they were all arrested. This guy wasn't.
I'm talking about Ray Epps. Ray Epps! Benghazi! Butter emails! Hunter Biden!
This guy wasn't. Not only that, but they were defending him in the New York Times, the Washington Post, all these different things saying Fox News has unjustly accused him of instigating when he clearly instigated. He did it on camera. I don't know if he was a Fed. I know a lot of people think he was a Fed.
Because he thinks that a lot of people think he was a Fed will somehow provide him some degree of insulation from liability. In other words, Pink Shrek is a moron. And he then went on to say that the Intelligence Committee were trying to frame Nitwit Nero because he was opposed to the deep state. And all the violence was instigated just to make Nitwit Nero look bad. Listen, you don't have to instigate violence, Joe Rogaine, to make Nitwit Nero look bad. He does that just by getting out of bed every morning.
Throughout history, people have...
He's so confident of shit he doesn't know. I mean, he's washed in the blood of stupidity.
Throughout history, people of unchecked power and unchecked influence have enemies. And Trump was their enemy.
The thing is, though, Ray Epps has already sued Fox News TV Radio Rwanda and noted testicle toaster Tokyo Rose Carlson for their on-air smears of him as an agent provocateur. As a result of those threats, he and his wife received death threats, and to give up their business, and to flee the home that they owned in Arizona. In his legal complaint, Ray Epps said, just as Fox had focused on voting machine companies when falsely claiming a rigged election, Fox knew it needed a scapegoat for January 6th. It settled on Ray Epps and began promoting the lie that Epps was a federal agent who incited the attack on the Capitol. And this is an interesting psychological moment. Because among conspiracy theorists, The fundamental rule is the inability to even show that the conspiracy exists proves that the conspiracy, wait for it, exists.
I'm just asking questions, man. Just asking questions.
And although he signed a $200 million contract with Spotify, and Spotify later had to go in and clean up some of Pink Shrek's more racist moments, not all of them, just the worst of them. Well, Atne Ute Aitbre, if you one what I ene. Because every word that came out of Pink Shrek's mouth was the very same bilge that had flowed out of the sewer that's Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. If he wanted, Ray Epps could ask his counsel to please reprint the complaint, and everywhere it says Fox or Tucker Carlson, just replace it with Joe Rogaine. And they may get burned out of this. And it would be absolutely delightful to see Joe Rogaine, who's just asking questions, get his questions answered for him by a jury after a lengthy discovery process involving every nickel he's made since, say, how about November 2020? And then let the jury go to work on it. This is not, as the saying goes, rocket science. If Joe Rogaine had competent counsel, but why do I bother to continue? They would tell him to just leave that shit alone. Or to use words like allegedly. Or, I'm speculating here. But no, he is confident in what he does not know. And so consequently, we wind up where we are. Now, one damn minute here, says Steve in New York, don't defile bacon grease like that. Probably true. Bacon grease is a noble ingredient. Lord knows. What could we use in replacement of bacon grease for whatever it is that slops around between Pink Shrek's ears and passes for brains? No, we'll come soon. Goose grease. Anybody out there particularly attached to geese? This is goose grease rendered from a goose that died of natural causes after a long and happy goose life, and who's... Okay. I think I've covered my bases here. Lichen barf? I didn't know lichens... Oh, let's not go after dinner in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone. I didn't know lichens did that. Ralph's olive oil? You like olive oil, don't you, Ralph's? I like olive oil. No. Neat's foot oil? That was used to soften up brand new baseball gloves. I think goose grease is good. Then again, the American frontiersman Jesse Chisholm, I heard years ago from one of his descendants. Died after eating tainted bear grease. Oh, I think we have a winner. Tainted bear grease. The tainted bear grease that sloshes around between Pink Shrek's ears. Bilbo Rick, I love you, but I am not going to say that because it's just cruel to start the week going after people's dinner. Or in some people's case, you know, Joy in Ann Arbor's breakfast. People don't always listen to the program live. Sometimes they catch it a few hours later. although billable. I'm gonna give you a couple of jingles just for how disgusting that truly is. And like I said, I'm kind of ready to be done with July because it was in this month that we found out, much to our horror and shock and sadness and chagrin, that our own dear Scott had gone on to the great beyond. And news comes today. Fans of classic rock will probably be saddened to know that Randy Meisner, one of the original founders of the Eagles, passed on at the age of 77. He was the bass player, and he was the one with the incredible vocal range who just about can shatter glass with the vocals and take it to the limit. Not even going to get close. Don't do that, Robin. We have a fundraising deficit. He shared lead vocal and was the bass player. And I'd forgotten that the Eagles actually started out as the backing band at Disneyland in July 1971 for Linda Ronstadt. Randy Meisner, Glenn Frey, Don Henley, and Bernie Leadon. Meisner was the harmony on The Best of My Love and Take It Easy. And he burned out with the band in 1977 in Knoxville, Tennessee. He had some complaints, Meisner did, and it pissed Glenn Frey right off. They had a Donnybrook backstage, and very shortly thereafter, Meisner said, "Fuck it," and quit the band. And, you know, he had a continued music career. And is dead at the age of 77. No word on as to cause. Yeah, maybe some right-wing asshole can jump out there and claim that it was because of the COVID vaccine. Well, like I said, we did pass the third anniversary this past week of the demise of Mr. 999 himself, Herb Cain. As he was referred to by Caribou Barbie. Yep, didn't get the vaccine. So nobody had to wonder if the vaccine killed Herb Cain. It was not getting the vaccine that... Yeah. Oh, and going back to Pink Shrek for just a moment. Brother Deacon Asa says, Joe Rogaine is a lefty Democrat, at least as far as Lobster Daddy's concerned. And Jordan B. Peterson. Don't believe me? Go watch his interview with Bill Maher, where Bill Maher referred to Lobster Daddy as a free speech hero. Oh, I know. Also a savior of Western civilization, which is a damned interesting concept. And by the way, in case anybody was wondering or worrying, Billable Rick says, my last Eagles concert was in October of 2022, long after Randy Meisner left the band. And then, yes, Dave, number 11, for last, Paul Rubens, known and beloved to millions upon millions as Pee Wee Herman. Passed away at the age of 70. And I really could have done without Agence France-Presse making reference to a horrifyingly embarrassing moment in his life, Paul Reubens' life. It doesn't need to be brought up in an obituary. The fact of the matter is, Paul Reubens, Pee Wee Herman, who rejuvenated the instrumental, well, they do say tequila once in a while, so I guess it's not a true instrumental, but rejuvenated that once popular song, Tequila, had cancer for 6 years and had fought it all along the way without mentioning it publicly. So, on his social media accounts, notice was published. Last night, we said farewell to Paul Reubens, an iconic American actor, comedian, writer, and producer whose beloved character, Pee Wee Herman, delighted generations of children and adults with his positivity, whimsy, and belief in the importance of kindness. Paul bravely and privately fought cancer for years with his trademark tenacity and wit. God, there's an entire generation, millennials, who learned a little bit about being decent human beings from just tuning in to Pee-wee's Playhouse. Before he passed on, Paul Reubens said, "Please accept my apology for not going public with what I've been facing the last 6 years." And the tributes poured in. You know, you'd hope that someone... it always bothers me when the tributes pour in after somebody's too dead to appreciate them or enjoy them. I mean, they didn't know he was sick. But you know what? That's another thing. You don't have to know somebody is sick to tell them that you value them and you cherish them. I try to do that generally every evening on this program. And I told Scott how special he was. Jimmy Kimmel said, "Paul Reubens was a brilliant and original comedian who made kids and their parents laugh at the same time. He never forgot a birthday and shared his genuine delight for silliness with everyone he met. My family and I will miss him." And it was 1985 when he teamed up with Tim Burton to create Pee-wee's Big Adventure. Pee-wee's Playhouse ran from 1986 to 1990. And even during interviews, he remained in character, which is no easy task. And then, of course, Agence France-Presse, again, returns like a dog returning to its vomit to allegations that were horrifying to Paul Reubens. Saying goodbye in his posthumous note, Paul Reubens said, "I've always felt a huge amount of love and respect from my friends, fans, and supporters. I've loved you all so much and enjoyed making art for you." Requiescat in pace. Matt in San Francisco, Eagles, saw them in my youth. Roy Orbison opened for them. I was too young to appreciate Roy. I can see how that might be the case. But Roy had a comeback. Especially once the Traveling Wilburys got going. Bill Maher, Steve in New York, says, Bill Maher was never worth a shit and proves that money does not equal talent. But when you get a good racket, I mean, oh God, what was the ABC program that he got bounced off of for remarks about 9/11, Bill Maher? But that has parlayed into some good dollars via HBO. Oh, I want to backtrack just a little bit to that moment, that moronic moment last week when Ron Monkey Up Duplantis said, no, rotted FK could never be my vice president because he's too liberal. But I might make him head of the CDC. Well, over on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, and I got to tell you, this does not inspire confidence on my part. It truly does not. I hate being in this position, but, well, Fox News TV Radio Rwanda had one of their producers get on the blower and see if Carl Turd Blossom Rove was roundabout to yakety yak with Bill Hemmer. And Carl Rove said something I actually agree with, which makes me want to shower in bleach.
He's got lots of conspiracies. 2004 election was stolen as computers. $250,000 votes in Ohio from John Kerry to George Bush and thereby gave him the election. 5G is a mass surveillance tool, and the telecoms, the telephone companies are in on it. CIA killed his uncle. Sirhan didn't kill his father. And he defends Russia and Ukraine. It's all Ukraine's fault that Russia invaded him and is killing his people. I mean,
well,
this guy's a nut.
Hey, Carl, despite all that, you know, he's attracted 20% in a lot of polling. So, I mean, his message on...
Well, sure, Bill Hemmer, he's got 20% in some polling. But those polls are of people who live under bell jars at the Ripley's Believe It or Not auditorium. Come on.
Some of these issues are gutting through, or at least cutting through for some in the electorate. What, you dismiss that?
I disagree. I think two things. One is his last name is Kennedy, and he's Robert Kennedy Jr. And second of all, Joe Biden is an incredibly weak candidate. I don't think people are supporting him because of the...
Oh, I feel all better now. I get to despise Karl Rove again. Joe Biden is not an incredibly weak candidate. And by the way, in case anybody's paying attention... Nimrata Haley is back out there again. She was on CBS's Face the Press this week, whatever, over the weekend. That was part of the time I spent sitting in the dark. And when I saw that, doing a little bit of barking, to be quite honest. Whew! Now Nimrata Haley showed up on CBS where... She again engaged in what I can only call wishcraft. No, not witchcraft. Wishcraft. She's trying to jinx Joe Biden or something because I guess she thinks she's got a winning line or maybe it gets her talked about. Oh, look, I'm talking about Nimrata Haley. So, you know, she's got 4% in the polls, but she's got us talking about what a dipshit she is. And there's no such thing as bad publicity. No, she engaged in that odious, stinking rotten, filthy witchcraft in which she's trying to jinx Joe Biden into the grave. Because there she was, talking to CBS again, blathering on about, we cannot turn America over to Kamala Harris. Well, you know what? When I vote in November 2024, I'm not going to be voting to turn America over to Kamala Harris. I'm going to be voting to make damn good and sure that the best president we have had, Jesus, maybe since FDR, stays the hell in office. And for Karl Rove to say, oh, he's an incredibly weak candidate. You think that might have something to do with the multimillionaire for-profit media who can't say that Joe Biden is a baptized child of God without talking about, you know, some specious, mendacious quote from some godforsaken maggot hollering, Biden crime family! Hell, my aching back. But I mean, so it's good to know that I'm okay, and Karl Rove is still a sick little prick. But he is right about rotted FK. He's a nut. If he did a halfway decent Andy Griffith, that would have been a dead lift from one of the Andy Griffith Show episodes. I think it was said about, wait, check me on this. I think it was said about Ernest T. Bass. And I think it was Barney Fife who said it. He's a nut!
These conspiracy theories, I think they're supporting him because of his name and because they want an alternative to Joe Biden.
Or they might like his message on the environment, which he's been on for decades. I mean, that's really been...
Decades,
he's
exactly.
He's always said, clean up the water and clean up the air. He was never on the Green right. New Deal. He was never on
Oh, shut up, Bill Hemmer! To the extent that the Green New Deal is even a thing, which it isn't, but that doesn't stop them blathering about it. Of course not. But to the extent that the Green New Deal is a thing, a centerpiece of it is we got to stop burning fucking coal. That's why Rotted FK came down to the Coal River Valley and rode our little hillbilly backs to make a movie about... nominally about ending mountaintop removal and putting wind turbines on top of the last mountain, which just happened to be the title of the movie. I'm in it, but thank God I'm not credited.
Electric chargers running from California to the state of Maine. He's a different kind of Democrat. The kind of right. Democrat that, frankly, you and I grew up with. Now, another topic because you...
Nah, we're not going to go to another topic. Honest to God, I think if you stood Bill Hemmer out in the rain, he'd probably drown just looking up with his mouth agape at the wide-eyed wonder of it all. Well, you know what, Matt? Nut percent. At least our nut percentage is only 20 instead of the right wing's 47. Or higher. And while he's blathered some bullshit about January 6th, at least he wasn't spraying... throwing ketchup at the walls and demanding to be taken down to the Capitol to be with
my people.
Great heavenly days. And then there was a little news out of the weaponization of the federal government committee with Dan Goldman No, Jeremy, it wasn't called putting wind turbines on the last mountain. It was just called the last mountain. And a lot of people watch. I mean, there was some monk or something in Rhode Island or somewhere who was talking about how their church school was powered by a wind turbine, and Bobby Tunnel, well, I don't know why we can't. I don't know why we can't do that for the hillbillies. Now, back, Dan Goldman, who could lawyer rings around Jim Jacket Off Jordan, and has, in the impeachments, they had a ballyhooed deposition of a dude bro by the name of Devin Archer. Archer was going to be the real big deal. He was going to pull back the curtains on the Biden crime family. And so over at CNN, Zachary Cohen, their reporter, said, House Republicans have insisted that Archer could provide a smoking gun piece of evidence that connects the president to his son's foreign dealings. And we're learning now, after one Democratic member of the House Oversight Committee emerged from this three-hour meeting, but he emerged and said, look, this testimony's offered no proof connecting the president to his son's foreign dealings. Speaking to The Hill, Dan Goldman, not mincing words, said, Devin Archer indicated that Hunter spoke to his father every day and approximately 20 times over the course of a 10-year relationship. Hunter may have put his father on the phone with any number of different people, and they never once spoke about any business dealings. As he described it, it was all casual conversation, niceties, the weather, what's going on, Goldman said, adding that there wasn't a single conversation about any of the business dealings that Hunter had. Meanwhile, the maggots who just really don't understand how depositions work, they should maybe do one. One genius said,
even for Goldman, that's a pretty obvious lie. How would he even know what those crooks were discussing? Was Goldman tapping their calls?
No. Goldman was describing what the right-wing star witness didn't say. It was the dog that didn't bark in the night. And as he left the building, somebody stuck a microphone in the face of Andy Biggs, who was in the same meeting. Oops.
He didn't know anything about that?
No.
Do you think today's testimony made it more likely that the president should be impeached?
I think we should do an impeachment inquiry. It's a different panel, but
yeah, it was kind of faint, but all of a sudden, some of the rare number of Republicans who don't pick their teeth with their toenail clippings have latched on to, and Andy Biggs is no fan of Kevers McCarthy, but Kevers McCarthy is running around now. I never said we should impeach President Biden. I didn't say that. Oh, blah, blah. I said we should have an impeachment inquiry. Because, see, Kevers McCarthy is not the sharpest knife in the chandelier. And it took a little while and maybe a few messages from some vulnerable Republicans who happened to operate in districts that Joe Biden won going away, saying to him, listen, dipshit, have you seen the size of our so-called majority? You impeach Joe Biden and my ass is grass and I'm going to be replaced by a Democrat and you're going to go back to sitting there as a minority leader getting run over by people who are infinitely smarter than you, fuckwit. Ah, oh, nice. There's nothing. I think we should have an impeachment inquiry. Okay. Don't ask me any more hard questions. Pretty please. And then an article from an outfit called Public Notice. This is almost like something you could swear that maybe Charlie Pierce wrote, but another intrepid ink-stained wretch named Liz Dye wrote it. Trump's superseding indictment paints a picture of a ridiculous Mar-a-Lago clown show. Ooh. These guys are comically bad at criming. Liz Dye writes, the newest Donald Trump indictment dropped last week, and above all, it is ridiculous. And then this. Cherish this, y'all. This is a beautiful moment. These are words used in an artful fashion that don't just come around every day. Liz Dye writes, God, I swear I want to have it done in calligraphy and put it in a frame and mount it here in the studio. Liz Dye must be from the UK because she uses a word that I've never heard anyone use who wasn't from the UK. You can help me if you want to on this one, Claire. I first heard this word maybe 1992. And I remember the guy's last name, but it's not worth mentioning. I'm sure he's long since dead. But his first name was Henry. And the magistrate before whom I practiced was an absolutely wonderful woman named Wendy. Among other things, she just loved our children, Annette's and mine. They were babies back then. And she was she had married an American serviceman, and poor thing, she was from Cambridge. And he moved her back to so far back in the hills in West Virginia that it wasn't the end of the world, but by God, you didn't need binoculars to see it. She was wonderful. That was back in my smoking days and couldn't smoke in the magistrate courtroom, so she'd shut the door and we'd smoke in the magistrate courtroom. Tobacco. We had our own Donnie Brooks, but she was a delight, and I loved her dearly. And she won going away every time she ran for office until she retired. And one day she was looking at Henry, whom she saw in her courtroom much more. And it wasn't like he was some sort of reprobate. He was just, had a hard time being a sober person and a person who behaved all at the same time. And that was the day that she looked at one of many. Looked at him and said, Henry, you're positively gormless. I swear, by my soul, you'd rather climb a tree and tell a lie than live on the ground and tell the truth. So when all was said and done, I looked at Wendy. Your Honor, tell me about this gormless. You used it with such verve. She said, it's just a word I grew up with for a very stupid person. I said, well, I like it. And so lo and behold, that was a long digression, wasn't it? Lo and behold, here's Liz Dye writing it on notice. Public notice, I'm sorry. The tale of the two gormless henchmen creeping around. She paints with words, Liz Dye does. The tale of the two gormless henchmen creeping around the basement, pointing flashlights at security cameras and the servers they'd been dispatched by Trump to wipe, all the while being captured by those very same cameras, is almost too ludicrous to bear. Who knew there could be something more preposterous than that photo of the tacky bathroom with the boxes stacked in the shower? And it's accompanied by the photo of the tacky bathroom with the chandelier directly above the toilet. The excitement started last Thursday morning with reports that Trump was about to be indicted in D.C. for his role in the January 6th Capitol riot. Instead, Special Counsel Jack Smith filed a superseding indictment in the Florida documents case, we know this, introducing us to a new defendant, Carlos de Oliveira, the Mar-a-Lago property manager. Like Walt Nauta, de Oliveira started as a valet before being promoted in 2022, and like Nauta, de Oliveira participated in the shell game with the former president's beautiful mind boxes to avoid the prying eyes of the FBI, as well as Trump's hapless lawyer, Evan Corcoran. Man, your lawyering career is pretty well done. When people routinely refer to you as Trump's hapless lawyer, Evan Corcoran. The next day, Corcoran and attorney Christina Bob, previously a reporter at One America News, ONAN, the network that spilled its news upon the ground, met at Trump's club with Jay Bratt, the head of the Justice Department's Counterintelligence Division. During the meeting, they handed Bratt a false declaration prepared by the hapless Corcoran and signed by Christina Bob, representing that, quote, a diligent search was conducted of the boxes that were moved from the White House to Florida, and, quote, any and all documents responsive to the subpoena accompany this certification. This scheme, which was, of course, documented in a long voice memo from Corcoran dictated the next day, forms the basis for counts 34 through 38 of the newest indictment. She says it's clear from the indictment that Trump's club is equipped with an extensive network of security cameras. That's how we know that Nauta met up with de Oliveira. After landing in Florida on June 25th at 5:46 p.m., the pair went to the security guard booth where surveillance video is displayed on monitors, walked with a flashlight through the tunnel where the storage room was located, and observed and pointed out surveillance cameras. She asks, and I would ask, too, I think, were they dressed like Joe Pesci and Daniel Stern in the Home Alone movies? Did they take flashlights because they hoped somehow to defeat the motion-activated camera sensors referred to in the evidentiary pleadings? We may never know, but we do know that at 9:48 a.m. on June 27th, de Oliveira approached the IT office and pulled Tavares aside for a private chat. A minute later, they were in an audio closet near the white and gold ballroom, because Mar-a-Lago has a white and gold ballroom. My, isn't that just a creative name? Where Trump's stolen boxes had been stacked before Nauta shifted them to the storage shed. And it's all just comedy art. All of this needs to be accompanied by yakety sacks. After delivering a verbal shushing emoji, de Oliveira allegedly told Tavares that Trump wanted the subpoenaed security camera footage destroyed. De Oliveira told Trump employee 4 that their conversation should remain between the two of them. De Oliveira asked Trump employee 4 how many days the server retained footage. Trump employee 4 responded that he believed it was approximately 45 days. De Oliveira told Trump employee 4 that the boss wanted the server deleted. Oh, no, take me too. No, take me. This is a Warner Brothers cartoon. Yeah, you know, only with international security, global conflict implications. Trump employee 4, saying something reasonably intelligent, said, I would not know how to do that. I do not believe that I would have the right to do that. Trump employee 4 told De Oliveira that De Oliveira would have to reach out to another employee who is a supervisor of security for Trump's business organization. De Oliveira then insisted to Trump employee 4 that the boss wants the server deleted. What are we going to do? Dave Barry could have written this. Carl Hiaasen could have written this in one of his wacky, zany Florida crime novels. I imagine Dave Barry and Carl Hiaasen, I don't know, maybe they called each other. They used to work together at the Miami Herald. Hey, Dave, you want to get together and read over the indictment? Might be some fresh fodder here. After being rebuffed by Tavares, you buying the beer? Fuck no. You've got a Pulitzer, don't you? Well, yeah, I could use it for the bottle opener. After being rebuffed by Tavares, De Oliveira and Nauta regrouped at 1:31. De Oliveira... I'm sorry, I'm just channeling that image from Scott of the monkey with the pencil and working the math problem, carry the 12. After being rebuffed by Tavares, De Oliveira and Nauta regrouped. At 1:31, De Oliveira dove through the bushes to meet Nauta on an adjacent property, presumably one without cameras. Snuck back through the brambles for another visit to the IT office, and then, like a Homer Simpson gif come to life, crossed back through the bushes to report to Nauta. This is definitely within the elements of a federal criminal conspiracy. And the original Watergate break-ins, especially if you've seen the White House plumbers or the other limited-run series about that moment in history, there was some seriously cockamamie shit going on. In fact, in the White House plumbers, we fix leaks. They were so clever. I think it's E. Howard Hunt's wife looks at him and says, Howard, that is the stupidest piece of bullshit I think I've ever heard in my life. Because she, Mrs. Hunt, had actually been a CIA agent at one time. Liz Dye said, the conspiracy here was not subtle and indeed was barely concealed at all. As if to reinforce that they were too stupid to be doing crimes, the group memorialized their code of omerta after Mar-a-Lago was raided. Nauta called Trump employee 5 and said words to the effect of, someone just wants to make sure Carlos is good. In response, Trump employee 5 told Nauta that De Oliveira was loyal and that De Oliveira would not do anything to affect his relationship with Trump. That same day, at Nauta's request, Trump employee 5 confirmed in a Signal chat group with Nauta and the PAC representative that De Oliveira was loyal. That same day, Trump called De Oliveira and told De Oliveira that Trump would get De Oliveira an attorney. Apparently, according to the reporting, the PAC representative is one Susie Wiles, She is described as a legendary Florida political operative who just happened to get sideways with Monkey Up and by default is now a loyal maggot. It was Susie Wiles that was there at Bed Monster about 2 years ago as Nitwit Nero gestured at a map of a foreign country and said, "Don't get too close. It's classified." At this point in time, Susie Wiles is now doling out money to a little cadre of pettifoggers. And they're the lawyers who represent other loyal maggots. That was the whole moment when Nitwit Nero said, "This totally wins my case, you know. Except it's like highly confidential. Secret. This is secret information. As president, I could have declassified it. Now I can't, but it's still a secret." What? Closing. She says, "From the boxes in the bathroom to the flashlights in the tunnel, from the lawyer fresh off a stand at Onan to the lawyer dictating a long memo explaining that his client instructed him to defy a grand jury subpoena, from Trump recording himself disseminating national defense information to his goons getting caught on camera trying to destroy the security footage, it's all so offensively dumb." Shushing emojis? Seriously? If the writers weren't already on strike, they'd walk out in protest. Next, we'll find out that the security camera footage was destroyed in a conveniently timed flood. Oh, wait. Because that already happened. Flavio, publication is publicnotice.co. Publicnotice.co. You know, this would have been absolutely perfect if there had been a reference to... Yeah, if my pal Rocky was here, would I turn on the gas if he was into something? You might, Rabbit, you might. Would I throw in a lighted match? Bang! All right, Rabbit, you've convinced me. I'll look for Rocky in the city. And once again, it's not the original crime. Geniuses. Not y'all. These maggots. It's the cover-up. I told you it was going to be a moranical Monday. Because I just looked down here and it's like, wait, where's the stress line? Yeah, I was charging it in the bedroom. So if you've tried to call in on the stress line, I apologize. I'll have it here in my before my little blue eyes. in short order. Now, the other thing about the passages from the indictment is that, well, somebody's talking. And that somebody is probably Yuskil Taveras, the one who said, "No, I don't know. I don't know nothing about wiping no cameras. You'll have to talk to the big head, the head IT guy." Can you imagine? And this question comes up every time we're talking about anyone working for him. But can you imagine actually wanting a job with Nitwit Nero? How venal must one be to think, you know what, I spent a lot of time and effort learning how to manage IT systems. I'm good at my job. I really am. I promise. I'm great at my job. But I can't imagine ever having a better job than being the IT guy down at Mogalardass. These people cannot be terribly intelligent. You sign on to work for Trump, you can't even be sure you're going to get paid. Something in me thinks that if you're an IT specialist and you go to work at Mogalardass, your last job may have actually ended when you got your entire department hammered by a fake Nigerian prince. Trump team, Matt in San Francisco, says, "Why do I have a mental image of all his henchmen packed into a small train car, opening the door, and then all falling out into the hallway?" Does it have to be a train, or can it be a steamship? Because then that's Night at the Opera with the Marx Brothers, isn't it? As to working at Mogalardass, Matt says, "At least you can be confident that you're smart." At least you can be confident that you're smarter than the boss.
Yeah, the boss wants these things erased.
Does the boss really? Does the boss know that's a federal crime?
No, he says to his cameras.
Well, you know, if the boss says so. And so now Nitwit Nero's actual defense is to stand in front of a bunch of hayseed wool hats in Iowa and say,
"Well, the cameras never got erased."
And that's his defense. I swear to God, I want to get a sequined gown and go and watch this trial. Yeah, I don't want to just show up, you know, looking like, no. I mean, I don't know, maybe a nun's habit or something, but it has to be special. And it will, I have to think there will have to be intermittent recesses of the proceedings just so people can collect their wits and stop laughing. I mean, this is deadly serious, but it's deadly serious stuff that was perpetrated by people who, like Larry, Moe, and Curly, look like the brain trust from the Brookings Institute or the Bland Corporation. Okay, Matt. No need to get shady. Trial. Bitch, you can wear the sequins. I'll wear the nun's habit. Deal.
Happy indictment, Mr. President. Happy verdict, Donald.
I don't know why I self-sabotage by singing when we've got such an opportunity here. We've got $265 to go. And that'll take us down to a little less than $750 deficit for beginning August. So please don't let Katz, Moscow Mitch go home to the mansion in Kentucky. Oh, the sun shines bright on his old Kentucky home. What am I doing? And tend your garden challenge. Thank you, Kat. Oh, let's see here. Theo. A little traveling music, professor. Hey, Robin. Hey, Theo. Rather than use Yakety Sax as a musical background to video number 45's ninnies going through their felonious idiocies, it should really be a Carl Stallings music from Warner Brothers cartoons, because this was one. Oh, true. And then the jury foreman gets to deliver the... That's all, folks. Oh, everybody's a fashion critic now. Steve in New York says, nun's habit. I'm thinking the most timely thing to wear is not a nun's habit, but the attire of the handmaidens from Handmaid's Tale. Oh, don't be so glum. This is going to be some seriously wacky shit. We need wackiness. Naughty nun. Lounge act, chanteuse, both suspiciously large. Yes. But then again, it's in Florida, Matt. We might get arrested. Yes, absolutely, Emilio. Just admit it, Robin. When you were young, you wanted to be a pop singer. I did. Can't carry a tune in a bucket, though. It would have to be lead-lined. So anyway, Yusel Tavares probably got a target letter from Jack Smith's team.
The deranged Jack Smith. I don't know why they won't use deranged. It's his first name, you know.
Salon said, Tavares is almost certainly cooperating because if he was served a target letter, he wouldn't talk to the government unless he was proffering evidence or attempting to cooperate. That's from a former federal prosecutor. Billable Rick, why can't you get in on the former federal prosecutor gravy train? And all the stuff in the superseding indictment seems to have come from Tavares. Christine Adams went on to say, talking to Salon, prosecutors can correlate that footage to what was occurring around the same time, which was that Trump and Nauta had talked on the phone before the boxes were moved and before an attorney was scheduled to arrive at Mar-a-Lago to review the documents. Testimony from Tavares authenticating surveillance footage of the boxes being moved and authenticating the timestamps for when the video was captured would be key to proving that Trump ordered the boxes to be moved to hide evidence. It's the timing that matters. And interestingly, Tavares also changed lawyers after he got the target letter. At the time, Tavares had been represented by Walt Nauta, a guy named Stan Woodward, who was being paid out of a Trump PAC, or a Trump-aligned PAC, which in turn is being funded by God knows whom. Christine Adams went on and told Salon, the government needs other people who can testify to what the defendants did and what they said. Tavares was at the property. He might have observed other events connected with moving the boxes, or he may have been present during other conversations that could shed light on the intent of removing the documents. He might have incriminating text messages. He might have been playing the saxophone. And we know, for instance, that Nitwit Nero has been running around for a while talking about what an idiot Squidney Powell is, and was, and ever shall be. There's not going to be a plea. I would not want to be Carlos de Oliveira or Walt Nauta right now. The worry has got to be nothing short of sickening. You know, just day after day after day of a swirly straw and a bottle of Ron Rico rum. But here's a little tidbit that may give us an idea of what the timing is going to look like going forward. Notice has gone out from the Magistrate Court of Fulton County. That's where Atlanta is. That's where Fonnie Willis is doing her work. And where Judge McBurney has taken to blistering the pettifoggers in Nitwit Nero's corner. Go back to earlier in the program. Well, according to the notice that went out from the Magistrate Court of Fulton County, anyone who has a court date through August the 18th, just a little short of 3 weeks, will be having their court appearances taken virtually. In a story by the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, anyone with court dates from today through the 18th of August must use a Zoom link that can be gotten by phone or email from the court. This was posted to Facebook. What the notice said was, things are looking a little different around the downtown courthouse. If you have a court case in downtown Magistrate Court or courtroom, please join us on Zoom on these dates. July 31st, August 1st, August 7th, August 8th, August 10th, August 11th, August 14th, August 15th, August 17th, and August 18th, 2023. If you don't have it, you may obtain a Zoom link by contacting us at, you know, and that was all from the Fulton County Sheriff's Department. And Natalie Ammons, who is a spokeswoman for the Fulton County Sheriff's Office, said when contacted by the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, the sheriff's office is coordinating with state and federal law enforcement to enhance security in advance of high-profile legal proceedings. Some of the measures we are deploying, such as barriers that will limit parking near the courthouse, will be obvious to the public for security reasons. Other measures being deployed will not be as obvious. Sounds like somebody knows there's some shit gonna hit the fan. Now, the question is, do you need all that security if it's just going to be a schmuck like Rudy Giuliani? Or maybe even a distinguished senator from South Carolina like Lindsey Graham? I'm guessing the answer is no. I'm further guessing that the answer is because an indictment, somebody has been told that a certain rotund, bloviating, orange-faced, comb-overed former occupant of the White House might be dropping by for a little arrangement. I don't know about you. It probably will, there probably won't be any drama. We're still not going to get to see him frog marched. We're still not going to get to see him in orange, apart from his complexion. And we're still not going to maybe even see the inside of the courtroom. And once he's indicted, the delay game begins.
Your Honor, I can't be tried for this right now. I'm very busy being tried for a whole shit ton of other stuff, if you haven't noticed.
Now, this is kind of funny. You may recall that Bill Hemmer, in the earlier clip, was blathering about polling numbers. Well, the New York Times joined up with Siena College to find out what Republicans were thinking about Donald Trump. And what that polling indicated is that Trump leads Monkey up by 37 percentage points. Do you remember, back in 2016 when the buzzword was economic anxiety? You know, I think they've got effects on the new Rodecasters. Maybe I'll get one of those some days. I miss my reverb. But I mentioned the economic anxiety. Because some of the people who looked at the polling numbers said that, the Republicans could be worried about, they could have some racial anxiety, and they could also be motivated by GOP hostility to changing gender roles, and they're probably busy grieving the loss of white straight male privilege. You see, the fundamental problem here is that even Republicans who feel fairly certain that Nitwit Nero actually committed crimes are still on board. Yes, but he committed them for us. So, Nitwit Nero's got 54%. Monkey Up's got 17%. Mike Pencil Neck Geek has 3%. Tim Scott's got 3%. Nimrata Wishcraft Haley has 3%. Vivek Ramaswamy has 2%. And Chris Christie is chasing the pack at, like, 1%. Chris, Will Hurd, just watching. So we may be watching Monkey Up fall apart before our very eyes. And I want tickets to that one, too. In the New York Times story, they said that the poll shows that some of Mr. DeSantis' central... I love how the Times is all stodgy. Mr. DeSantis. Colonel Bat Guano, if that really is your name. Mr. DeSantis, some of Mr. DeSantis' central campaign arguments that he's more electable than Mr. Trump and that he would govern more effectively have so far failed to break through. Even Republicans motivated by the type of issues that have fueled Mr. DeSantis' rise, such as fighting radical woke ideology, favored the former president. What's a poor little white supremacist panderer to do? Norm Ornstein, over at The Atlantic, said, "This comes as no surprise, but it's still stunning. Republicans in the country line up behind a serial grifter, liar, and narcissistic sociopath, inciter of a violent insurrection, and obstructor of justice. Cult to the max." And it wouldn't be a Times story if they didn't have a man-on-the-street interview with a cranky old white guy from New Hampshire. 69-year-old retail manager there. Who told the Times, David Green did. He might say mean things that make all the men cry because all the men are wearing your wife's underpants and you can't be a man anymore. You gotta be a little sissy and cry about everything. But at the end of the day, you want results. Donald Trump's my guy. He proved it on a national level. He's your guy, is he, David Green? Been in your wife's panty drawer lately, buddy? Over at XM, it was Michelangelo Signorile who latched onto the David Green quote and says, "It really says it all about the MAGA male voter grieving the loss of white straight male privilege." And God, do I love... I love these algorithms. So the story's got David Green, 69 years old, of New Hampshire, saying, "All the men are wearing your wife's underpants." And lo and behold, when I clicked on the story to open it, what do I have? Panty ads. Oh, Jesus. We have to do something about these algorithms. They're really bad. It's the algorithms. They're destroying America. They're making sissies of 69-year-old retail manager David Green. And it was Daniel Nakanian at Bolts magazine who said, "The line that stood out in the new GOP poll, Mr. Trump still received 22% among voters who believe he has committed serious federal offenses." That's rather a lot.
And anytime I see serious federal offenses, I can't help myself, because we all know how much I love this movie. What was the quote again from Bolt magazine? Still received 22% among voters who believe he has committed serious federal crimes. A greater share than the 17% that Mr. DeSantis earned from the entire GOP electorate.
Well, the thing we have to talk about is your unwitting participation in this serious federal crime.
Yes, we do. We do. And people fell over themselves to say something pithy about that quote. Renee Graham at the Boston Globe said, white supremacy is a hell of a drug. Moshe Temkin, associate professor of history and public policy at Harvard's Center for European Studies, said, wow, this poll shows that a liar, a sociopath, a huckster, a hypocrite, a charlatan, and a criminal get about 30% of the Republican vote. Everyone else supports Donald Trump. Ooh! Yeah. And doing a deep dive in history, and I always appreciate this, the host of Beyond Politics, Matt Robison, said, reminds me of the seminal 1950s study from Leon Festinger, When Prophecies Fail, where the term cognitive dissonance came from. Cult members cannot abide any evidence that might disprove their fanaticism. Their response is to simply double down. And here, well, here we are. Okay, that's good, Steve. The information in the superseding indictment. This is like a person taking a selfie while they rob a bank. Also a little bit like a guy in Florida robbing a liquor store with an alligator. I'm always going to reference that. Steve, it's anxiety over gender roles. Sorry, not my last email. I'm feeling especially spicy tonight. Spice it up, Steve. What the fuck? Like the maggot men have anxiety over having to cook for themselves? You would too if you didn't know how to turn the stove on or operate a microwave. Those poor manly masculine men of masculine masculinity sitting there just chomping away on raw broccoli. Oh, the humiliation. The poor things can't even open up a can of Armor potted meat. Now there is an assault on the dinner hour. Ugh! Jeremy says, to the guy in New Hampshire, Trump wears a girdle, a diaper, and the closest thing to male pumps you can wear. Oh yeah, he's a manly man for sure. Yes, and ran around with Rudy in a dress and told him he was beautiful. Emilio, they weren't there before. We'll just leave it at that. But because it's Moran Monday, it really wouldn't be fair if we didn't have some genuine, bona fide, 200-proof Moranity. Lucky for us, we have Charlie Kirk. The man with the largest head of any human being on Earth, and yet somehow manages not to contain a similarly sized primate brain. I mentioned earlier, toward the beginning of the program, the appearance of Devin Archer for a meeting at which Andy Biggs, among others, and as we know, Daniel Goldman was in attendance. And Charlie Kirk, that super genius, was beside himself. Oh, the entire house of cards of the Biden family was going to come crashing down. And see, this is what makes this comedy, because we already know from both sides of the aisle that Devin Archer didn't know shit. But, well, suffice to say that if you were to happen to run across Charlie Kirk, and you just happen to have like two or three kidney beans in your pocket, Charlie Kirk would trade you the family cow for your three kidney beans. And here's the finer point of this. It doesn't turn into the beanstalk that goes up to where the giant lives. It just grows three kidney bean plants. Oh, but they were beside themselves. The great day was finally upon them. The moment of glory had finally arrived. All would be revealed.
The laptop gives us part of the detail, but in the laptop we have evidence that then points to Devin Archer. So now you have this all finally bubbling up. The first 2 years we were unable to really make any traction on this because the high priestess of the Democrat Party, Nancy Pelosi, ruled with an iron fist, female Stalin, and for...
Oh, I'm glad he's seated. That's all I'm saying.
Forbade any of this. Subpoenas, depositions, they were too worried about the January 6th committee. But now, thanks to us winning back the House of Representatives, and honestly, the very aggressive stance that the House Republicans are taking on this, we're finally getting the truth. And Devin Archer is there right now. Devin Archer is hopefully, I think he is, going to tell the truth. Devin Archer is more than a whistleblower. Devin Archer is the epicenter. I mean, Devin Archer can tell you everything. In fact, Devin Archer can tell you probably about the numbered accounts. I guarantee you that there's more money out there than we know. I guarantee you there's money in Cayman Islands, Swiss bank accounts, third world countries, real estate and kids'
giant
names.
Giant plastic Coke bottles.
So the then what is going to come? Well, he's doing a transcribed interview under oath. Very pointed questions. I'm sure House Republicans are grilling him.
Oh, grilling.
But you have to ask the question, why
Searing.
Is Devin Archer doing this?
Why?
Because Devin Archer is in the ultimate, he believes he has nothing to lose.
Oh, a man with nothing to lose. That's a dangerous man. And Devin Archer is dangerous. Now this Michigas was being broadcast live at the same time, allegedly, as Devin Archer was in there talking to the members of Congress going, I don't know, man. Nah, I mean, you know, he'd get on the phone with his son, you know, a couple of times a year, whatever, you know, and he'd be on with somebody else, and they never talked about business. It's just like, hey, how's the wife and kids? Yeah, you know, she's taking up tennis. I could never get used to tennis. Maybe it's because you have to wear those short pants.
I think part of this is revenge. I think Devin Archer, based on these text messages, he's mad. Where else is Devin Archer going to go? The regime has thrown him aside.
Regime.
The regime cast him aside. So DOJ goes after Devin Archer. He's going to go to jail. And he says, you know what, Hunter? I covered for you a lot. I guarantee you this is personal. Mm-hmm. I guarantee you. How many times do you think Devin Archer covered up, cheated the truth to cover for Hunter Biden's crack addiction, Hunter Biden's lying, Devin Archer was probably the sane guy in the room. Devin Archer was probably the guy that showed up to the meetings on time.
I swear to God, I think Charlie's looking for Devin Archer on Grindr. Bottom for top. Because, well, Charlie. Oh, someday, Charlie. Someday. You're going to be caught in a bathroom.
Hunter Biden would come and blitz in an hour and a half late. And Devin Archer probably has this pent-up resentment.
Blitzen? No Donder? Dasher, Dancer, Donner, Blitzen, no Comet, no Cupid?
Of, after all I did for you, after all the lies I told, after all the...
I mean, this is... I'm sorry, but I was a little... But this is what passes for a right-wing masturbatory fantasy. And then Devin Archer's gonna say, Hunter Biden, I lied for you. And then Devin Archer's gonna, honey. You've been thinking about Devin Archer again, haven't you, Charlie? And of course, they wouldn't be Real America's Voice, such as it is. Wouldn't be doing this if it wasn't making a buck. They wouldn't be doing this if people weren't tuning in. And so all across the Fruited Plain, Emery and Marveline were sitting there on the edge of their barca loungers there in the Ballerina Swan Lake Trailer Park and Country Club, and just waiting. Because Charlie's giving them the straight skinny, because Charlie's a smart boy. Yeah, sure.
Faced, we're done, and I'm now going to sing.
Sweet mystery of life, at last I've found you.
Devin Archer seemed to be the brains behind the operation. Why? Because there's no way Hunter Biden was the brainchild. Joe Biden was the architect. Joe Biden, again, this is, we're just getting an unprecedented window into how all these families operate. The Bidens, the Obamas, they do this.
The Trumps? I mean, the Trumps? Sketchy meetings with Middle Eastern gazillionaires and buy-ins into sketchy venture capital scenes to the tunes of billions and billions of dollars. Grifty rentals of hotel rooms at that tacky old thing that used to be in the old post office building on Pennsylvania Avenue. Licenses to manufacture caskets for precious Princess Iwanka. Can he tell us how that family operates there, Chuckles?
And have done this for decades. This is the standard operating procedure. The Clintons did this. The Clintons weren't the sloppy. They just kill, well, allegedly.
The Clinton Chronicles! A libel so scurrilous that even Jerry Falwell had to walk away from it, but, well, Chuckles knows his audience.
Kill the people in their circle. Or they, no, I'm sorry, the people in their circle commit suicide. I'm sorry. Just, they don't kill anybody. They just disappear. Vanish.
Because Vince Foster vanished in a hail of bullets fired at a watermelon in a backyard in Georgia, or maybe Indiana.
You ever look at the Clinton suicide list? Oof. A lot of suicide going on in the Clinton circles. The Biden family has been outspoken for years about, we love the country, we love middle class America, and they've been selling out America, selling out America, selling out America. What is Devin Archer sharing? What is Devin Archer putting forward?
Nothing you're fantasizing about.
This could bring down the entire deal, which goes to show why the DOJ was working on the weekend, which goes to show why they are so nervous. Devin Archer is the linchpin. He is the epicenter.
Yeah, the DOJ was all nervous because Dark Brandon was going to come along with his laser beam eyes and just fry them all. Why do you think he wears those aviator sunglasses? Those laser beams are powerful. The Biden crime family is going to put fluoride Charlie Kirk, in little children's ice cream.
This is exactly why Joe Biden deployed the entire federal government to protect his son, because he's afraid that his son would do what Devin Archer is doing right now, that he would...
Then why did Hunter Biden sign a plea deal on charges that almost anybody else the DOJ wouldn't even fuck with? Because of this kind of bilge. I know, Steve, I'm confused too. Hunter Biden was a liar. Hunter Biden was a crack addict. Hunter Biden traded on his dad's name. Hunter Biden did not acknowledge his own daughter. Joe Biden was very wrong for not acknowledging his seventh granddaughter until just a few days ago. All true. See, we can admit that because we don't live up... We don't live up people's fundaments and can criticize our own. Now, where exactly does Joe Biden, who's the president, was the vice president, was a senator since God was a teenager, fit into this? I know. This is rhetorical. But it's nice to remind ourselves of this. Right, you are. And Matt in San Francisco, Clintons. The Clintons weren't sloppy, they just killed people? Of course, as everyone knows, leaving a trail of dead bodies is neat and clean. No one ever asks questions when they find random dead bodies. The fuck is this guy talking about? My head hurts. Well, have some sympathy. He's got the biggest head of any human being on planet Earth. And... imagine what it must be like to live in there with the shrieking of the spirochetes. Just imagine. He's talking about the things that keep the rubes ginned up. Because absent a ginned up rube base, you're never going to get them all the way over to this way to the egress. Kick him outside the show and then get another nickel of him out of him coming back in. This just in.
Friend, with the end of month deadline only hours away, President Trump is closely tracking our account to see how close we are to crushing our July fundraising goal. Not only is he checking to make sure that we're staying on track for our monthly budget, but he's also seeing who is helping us get there. He's watching you. He sees you when you're sleeping. He knows when you're awake. He knows if you're a low-life Trump, Biden supporter, and he knows if you're a true patriotic American supporter of Donald Trump. Grassroots donors like you are the lifeblood of our campaign. And the reason we were able to achieve the impossible and put more funds in our coffers last quarter than Crooked Joe. But please note, President Trump explicitly said he wants all donors to know that they should never feel pressured to donate.
Hey, you hear that, Marvelline? Hey, you don't want us to feel pressured to donate. Well, I don't feel pressured, but I feel like we better donate lickety-split because he might know.
If you're doing poorly due to the sinister Democrats who are hurting our country right now, then just go about your day.
And once again, we find ourselves asking that seminal question. Who falls for this shit? Honestly!
Just go about your day. I'll be fine. Deranged Jack Smith is coming for me. But you just go ahead and you sit there in your matching burka loungers at the Ballerina Swan Lake Country Club and Trailer Court. And don't think about me. The FBI wrecked. They wrecked my golf shed. My beautiful estate at Mar-a-Lardass is a shambles. The gold, the black and gold ballroom, the white and gold ballroom, it will never be the same. Never again will the tacky music of a disco DJ play there as people cavort the nights away, and by people, I mean me.
When you look at the numbers, and I don't even know if they break them out into, you know, small dollar donations or whatever. But if it's anyone, who isn't either G, I Love Money or JP Got Rocks, this is one of the greatest hustles of all time. And the whole thing is accompanied by a photograph of Nitwit Nero, presumably sitting aboard a jet or something with oval windows, with one right hand, with his right hand poised in the air, one little index finger barely pointing, staring at a laptop computer, earnestly staring at a laptop computer like he's not sure quite what he's looking at.
What does it mean my computer is infected and to press here?
With his index finger poised to click.
It's infected? Now it's infected? It wasn't infected before? That's that deranged Jack Smith and that black woman in Atlanta and that black man in Manhattan and Crooked Joe. They infected my computer.
We have a correction here from Darlene in Connecticut. No, in Ray Three Stooges comparison. Not the Brookings Institution. Yuck. How about, like, the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen? I'll see your League of Extraordinary Gentlemen and raise you the Acme Corporation, Darlene. Yeah. You reckon Charlie Kirk's sober now? I mean, right now. Yeah, it probably is. This is like a televangelist thing they do. Their predictions don't come true, their prophecies fall flat, and then they just go out and pick a new date on the calendar.
Friend.
But I've seen several stories in the last few days indicating that there are Republicans, I don't know where, but there are Republicans who are growing weary of all the bilious palaver. Yes, they do. Stephen, New York says WWWCD. They all wear their What Would Wile E. Coyote Do bracelets. Yes. Wile E. Coyote walked into instant hole for our sins. The National Republican Congressional Committee is chaired by one Richard Hudson, a Republican from North Carolina. Four days ago in Politico, an article there, a story pointed to Richard Hudson, referring to him as a Republican who is questioning the effectiveness of going after the president's son. Richard Hudson, interviewed by Politico, said, "I think when we get home, the focus is the economy, the border, crime. These are the issues that matter, and these are the issues we're talking about. Hunter Biden's a focus in D.C., but not in other parts of the U.S. And further in the article, the two reporters, Natalie Allison and Allie Mutnick, said that the debate about how hard to go after Biden over his son's legal problems has been stirring inside the party. That's stirring. It hasn't even reached a simmer yet. But one GOP strategist, I always wondered what the qualifications were for that, a guy named Mike Madrid, said that the Hunter Biden fetish just, quote, just smells like Benghazi. In that same article with Politico, he told them Republicans trying desperately to make a story. It's always, we've got a witness coming. We got more coming. It's always next week. It's like a soap opera. Tune in next week. And he's surprised how? For 4 years, it was always Infrastructure Week. But again, do you think this will push them away? These Republican voters? No. And it certainly won't push the people pulling the strings away, because it's a good dollar. It's a great grift. You can send these maggots through this way to the egress time after time after time, and the light never goes on. They're back around paying the nickel again and wondering why they haven't seen the egress yet. They're really big. They're hard to miss, the egresses. The plumage and everything. Oh, let's check. And by the way, we are into the third hour of the program. We got $265 to raise on Kat's very kind and generous Have a Show on Me. And if it's met, it'll be Have Two Shows on Y'all and Kat. Larry over the weekend provided a Have a Show on Me. We had two, three on Friday. And that's why we're as close to caught up as we are. If we meet that challenge goal, the go home Mitch McConnell, go home to your mansion Mitch McConnell and tend to your garden challenge, we will finish the month of July only about $745 in the hole. It's not optimum, but it's not 1200, it's not 1500, and that's 26 folks at $10 or 10 people at $26.50 or some larger combination. I hope we can do it. So, counsel for the parking garage. Is not having the best of times. It hasn't gotten to the point where somebody refers to her in a political piece as hapless. But she can see hapless from where she stands. She's apparently the Clarence Darrow who told Nitwit Nero, "Listen, just tell them you can't be guilty of obstruction of justice because you didn't delete the tapes. You didn't delete the video. That's how come they can see those geniuses running around with their flashlights. Okay? And so Joyce Vance over at MSNBC was talking to Chris Jansing. They got, I think, what you might call kind of fun.
Investigations as a way to say I'm being targeted because I am the strongest opponent of President Biden, and that's why they're coming after me. I mean, that's not just a throwaway line here. It's a way to make what could, for any other candidate, be a weakness appear in his case to be a strength. And in poll after poll after poll, we're finding that at least for now, in this stage of the primary, it's working.
Yeah, we're going to talk in a little bit about the latest poll, which is all good news for Donald Trump. Let me go back to the legal part of this, because Alina Haba, who is one of Trump's lawyers, spoke this weekend.
Oh, come on. Come on, Chris, you're MSNBC. Chris, please, call our counsel for the parking garage. These are dark days, and we need that moment. Alina Haba, formerly counsel to a parking garage.
They're planning. Let me play it for you, Joyce.
What was the obstruction of justice? Because no tapes were deleted. He turned them over. He cooperated, as he always does. You will see that every single video, every single surveillance tape that was requested was turned over. If President Trump didn't want something turned over, I assure you, that is something that could have been done. But he never would act like that.
Okay,
he is the most ethical American I know.
Is that a viable defense?
Wait, what, Edith, huh? He's the most ethical American I know. I don't want to go where I'm tempted to go, because it's just not proper. But I did see a photograph of her with her now Melania-shaded tresses, sitting with Nitwit Nero, apparently on counsel for the parking garage's 40th birthday, I think it was. And a huge cake, and her and him sitting together.
Happy birthday, Alina Haba. Nah.
What basis of fact does she even remotely have for suggesting that there is an ethical molecule, that there is an ethical atom, that there is an ethical subatomic particle in the entire adipose corpulent waddling wobbling being of Nitwit Nero? Case closed, says Steve in New York, feeling spicy. I fired
at him, but I missed, so no charges, right?
Right?
If I'd wanted to hit him, I would have hit him. I didn't hit him. See?
Joyce? Well, talk is cheap when you're on television and you have the ability to say anything that you'd like to. That is a pretty fact-free analysis of the situation. The reality is that the government's pleadings reflect what the government believes it has evidence to prove beyond a reasonable doubt in court. And that evidence is very clear when it comes to obstruction of justice. The facts are, in essence, not challenged, that the former president held on to documents, refused to turn them over. The government had to execute a search. And now more details are emerging about events that are depicted on videotape, showing movement and documents that surface in Bedminster, with Trump saying out loud that he was aware he no longer had the ability to declassify information and wasn't even sure he should be showing it to people in the meeting where he waves around the battle plan for Iran. So, that's sort of a good luck with that sort of defense attempt from Alina Haba. Great, perhaps, for Trump in the court of public opinion, not very likely to succeed in a court of law.
And Garrett was just talking about how this could all confuse what is already a complicated situation, which is to run for president. What about on the legal side as we look to see what Fani Willis might do this week or next?
Right. So it's very difficult to assess how all of these four different potential prosecutions against Trump interplay. One of the interesting aspects of this is that any statements he makes in public about any of these cases can be used against him in court proceedings in others. So, again, we're not talking about a typical case. If we were, he wouldn't be talking about any of these prosecutions publicly because all of it hangs out there. As for scheduling, this becomes a very complicated matter, but there's a double-edged sword for Trump if he continues to delay the Mar-a-Lago prosecution. If a judge down the road sees a gap of a couple of months on his trial calendar, they might slide one of these later indicted cases into an earlier position. So although Trump has used delay very successfully as a tactic over the years, it may be that it's not all upside for him this go-round.
Is that a very dryly, lawyerly, witty way of saying, yeah, slide one in, he may be fucked because I'm beginning to think, I mean, a lot of people are beginning to think that he is. Oh, and since we had a rotted FK story earlier, we now know where more than half of rotted FK's campaign funds came from. The super PAC that rotted FK has in its filings noted that, well, more than half of the nearly $10 million on hand came from one single white wing mega donor. And not just that, not just any white wing mega donor, but a former Trump supporter by the name of, and the last name may just maybe make a little bell ring for you, Timothy Mellon. Now, the gang over at Politico writes that the donations underscore that while Kennedy enjoys the surname of Democratic royalty,
ugh.
Royalty, really? So much for that little dust up in April of 1775. His message is also resonating with Republicans. Oh, grow up! His message isn't resonating with anybody. I mean, I guess as referenced earlier, his message is resonating with people who live in bell jars under bell jars in Ripley's Believe It or Not auditorium. But there's no one who isn't gripping their toenails and tearing madly away, even as we speak, with whom our rotted FK resonates. So the minute that rotted FK announced his candidacy, American Values 2024 went live. Through the end of June, they said they had raised $9.8 million and had raised $6 million in the month of July. That's $16 million of money for Donald Trump. Because that's how this plays. Of the $9.8 million reported, $5 million came from Timothy Mellon, a longtime GOP donor who gave $1.5 million to a Trump-aligned group last fall. In a press release earlier Monday, Mellon touted Kennedy's bipartisan credentials, calling him
the one Democrat who can win the general election.
Most of the rest of the money came from a guy who was a former advisor to Jeff Bezos, a guy named DeBecker. Really? So if it's not abundantly clear at this point what the rotted FK game is about, yeah, I saw Tim Mellon tonight, and Steve in New York just wrote and said, as in Mellon Scaife, as in the American Spectator, as in Mein Kampf in periodical form, yes, as in the Arkansas Project, in which old Snakehead himself, James Carville, once famously observed that they're dragging $100 bills through trailer courts in Arkansas. Now, this one could properly be labeled Save It for Wednesday. But no. No, because, whoa, there is morality involved. It comes out of course, where else? Florida. ''65-year-old Mark Grennan and his sons, 37-year-old Jonathan Grennan and 35-year-old Joseph Grennan and 29-year-old Jordan Grennan, were all convicted by a federal jury in Miami. This was a little earlier, but wow, is this good. The convictions were for conspiring to defraud the United States and deliver misbranded drugs. And they're looking at it up to 5 years in the joint. They're scheduled to be sentenced on October 6th. Further indication that this was probably a zany trial. Dad and his three sons. Na 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 na. Stop! They represented themselves, yes. Yeah. They had fools for a client and idiots for a lawyer. And so when the jury came back and said, oh, no, you are fucking guilty. The senior grinned and said, oh, we'll be appealing. They're out of Bradenton, Florida. I remember back in the days when my mom and grandmother would devotedly watch the PTL Club, seemed to recall some of the grifters that would show up on there being from the general Bradenton area, and I think it's probably a hotbed of evangelical nutbaggery. They represented themselves by not taking the stand. The prosecution said the father and son Grennans were con men, that they were snake oil salesmen. Because what they were doing and what they were indicted for was selling, wait for it, Miracle Mineral Solution. Look, sheep to be shorn, okay? Sheep to be shorn. Miracle Mineral Solution, it turns out, is bleach. They sold it as a cure for COVID. They sold it as a cure for Alzheimer's. They sold it as a cure for autism, brain cancer, HIV, AIDS, multiple sclerosis. And it was chlorine dioxide. And when one of the rubes ingests it, it becomes a bleach typically used for things like bleaching textiles, bleaching industrial water, bleaching pulp in the paper process. And drinking it can be fatal. They'd been enjoined from selling it since 2020, but they went ahead and kept selling it. Two of the numbskulls, grifters, con men, snake oil salesmen, Christians, were arrested in Bradenton. But Mark and Joseph Grennan hightailed it to Colombia, where they were nonetheless arrested and sent back to the United States. Jonathan and Jordan Grennan were also convicted of violating federal court orders requiring them to stop selling Miracle Mineral Solution in 2020. Sheep to be shorn. I wonder if there was any proof that it, they sold $1 million worth of this shit. Well, hey, Arnold, that looks like a fun place. Let's run over to the stress line and see who's there. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Robin, this is George from Core School, California.
Hey, George, how are you?
Okay, how are you?
I'm great.
Yeah, I had a theory to run by you and a question.
Okay.
The theory is, I grew up on reading spy novels and stuff. The Russians are known to be tacticians in chess and so forth.
Right.
I have a theory that Prigozhin and Putin ran a game on the military to pretend there was going to be a mutiny to see who popped his head out to support it.
You know, anything's possible in Mother Russia.
Putin would do.
Yeah, I'm not going to.
My question is, Counselor, you keep talking about the Biden laptop. Everybody's talking about Biden laptop. Isn't the chain of custody a question regarding that? And why are we accepting these theories about the Biden laptop?
Well, we aren't. I think it's been bullshit from jump. And the chain of I can't even begin to it is incomprehensible to me, knowing a little bit about chains of custody, to think that it would even be remotely possible to establish one.
I mean, they say that the Russians at one time were messing with it.
I don't even necessarily know that it was ever Hunter Biden's laptop, to be quite honest.
Yeah, so we should probably have a qualifier before, you know, like a so-called Biden laptop.
I mean, the theory was, among other things, that, and I guess this was some sort of attempt to prove its validity. I understand, I lose IQ points, George, even when I talk about this. That the porn photos that marginal trailer queen, showed in Congress were supposedly off of Hunter Biden's laptop.
Yeah,
who knows?
I don't believe that either.
Yeah, who knows? But at some point in time, if they actually want to make something out of it, now, in Congress, you can do just about anything you want to if you have the majority, okay? It's dependent entirely upon the willingness of the majority to actually play by the rules. Hearings in Congress are not like a courtroom hearing. You know, the rules of evidence are not in effect. The rules of civil procedure are not in effect, and arguably, there are no rules of ethics in effect either, if we look back to Marge's little stunt.
And, Robin, aren't they on vacation till Labor Day or something?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
They're so gone. I mean, that's
okay,
why.
Okay, let's hope for some indictments this week.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, it's not just Jack Smith anymore. Fonnie Willis has said, we're ready to roll, and apparently something's going to hit the fan between now and the 18th.
Because they're ready for battle.
And I think Fonnie Willis is not anybody that especially not that gang of miscreant pettifoggers wants to screw with. She's going to bring receipts, and you know, she's got, it begins to appear that she's got Rudy in her hip pocket. And at the end of the day, Rudy will roll on anyone. Rudy does not give a shit.
And unless the state government takes over her prosecution.
I don't know if they can.
Yeah, I don't know either.
But, you know, it is Georgia, and it is, like any other Confederate state, a hotbed of potential maggot insurrection. So if I was a law enforcement officer in Atlanta, I would be girding my loins with the armor of the Lord, you know, like the Bible says. But there is an aspect of this, George, that I think is noteworthy. If a bunch of maggots show up and try to make asses of themselves, well, they'll succeed in making asses of themselves, whatever they do. But if they show up and misbehave, what I want to know is, will the Atlanta cops scream terrorism and go after them the way that they did after the people who were protesting Cop City? Because you know how you had everybody from the governor of Georgia down to the attorney general, all kinds of people screaming that these are terrorists who hate the police. Well, I mean, we've seen what happens when terrorists who hate the police attack you. I mean, that was January 6th, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was in Portland.
Yeah. So I'll be curious to see if the level of seriousness and, frankly, the level of violence that is leveraged by law enforcement against any potential political violence is met with the same degree of ferocity. Make sense?
Not bloody likely.
I don't think so either. You mentioned Portland. I think it'll be like the cops in Portland and Antifa.
Well, Robin, I'll let you go. Let somebody else have a chance. Have a good night.
George, thanks for your patience. I appreciate you. You have a wonderful evening.
You too.
It's always great to hear from you. Bye. George and Korskull, those are... Ooh. Now my synapses are tangling. Really, though. You know, the cops, and we know now that nobody fired at the cops first. They just slaughtered that non-binary soul in Atlanta. Killed them deader than Pharaoh's cat. And so far, they're getting away with it. Now, if you've got a bunch of white people who are equally more violent by orders of magnitude than a bunch of peaceniks trying to stop a neighborhood green space from being turned into a warfare training center for police warfare against the citizenry. Now, I'm not holding out a shitload of hope. But if they want to show up and they want to be assholes, then move in and bust some skulls. But I have a feeling that, well, they'll share a common, a more common than not complexion, and that will probably be dispositive. Yeah. Again, about 29 minutes to go. Trying to raise $265. And I know we're all exhausted from keeping up with this. And by the way, please like and subscribe to the podcast if you're listening to the podcast. And please leave a comment. It boosts the visibility a bit. I'm actually seeing that in real time. If you listen on TuneIn, please press that heart button there on the player, and hopefully, you know, we'll get all the way to 1,000 whole listeners. I know, Pink Shrek piffles at 1,000 listeners, but, well, we're not saying things about January 6th or the elections that could get a billion-dollar judgment handed down against us. So we've got that going for us, which is good. Back over to the stress line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Howdy, Robin. How are you?
Hey, Jerry. I got you. How are you?
I am sitting in the rain in my August Florida shirt and my August Florida shorts, which when I moved down here as a New Yorker, I didn't even understand, and I thought they were rather uncivilized. Went to a thrift shop today. I got this shirt, cotton construction, and my AC is out. AC's been out for a while, but so I'm dealing with the old school style. I'm out here watching the rain. I even got a little southern drawl and tilt today. How you doing, child?
You do got a little southern drawl, and yes, you do. Mercy sakes.
I'm embracing it. I'm embracing it.
We are who we are.
I guess I was talking to some Floridians earlier, so I can just shift the Twitter. Let me gather my thoughts. Anyways, no, I was just feeling very plantation-y with the misty, been like 100-esque all day. And then the rain just burst, so it's at that first precipitation point where the temperature dropped about 20 degrees. And it's still humid as hell, but it's gorgeous. I'm sitting here with an umbrella because I knew the skies were going to break out. Anyways.
Well, yeah, I was gonna ask you, have you ever inhabited or been in, say, a single wide trailer when the power's out and there's no air conditioning?
Yes.
That's the position that my son and my lovely daughter-in-law and their kids are in right now down in Tennessee. Turns out Appalachian.
I'm 8/10 of that.
Yeah.
But there's like, I have concrete on some of my structure. Okay. So I'm not doing the whole metal vibration tin can thing. I was like, I can't. You see ants run out of a tin can.
Well, they've got it. It turns out that they have Appalachian power too, just like me.
Wow.
And it turns out they're no better down there than they are up here. So I think everything from Bristol to Kingsport has been out of power today, according to them. It is not fun. Big old thunderstorm rolled through, and that was all she wrote for the rickety old coal-fried power grid that Appalachian Power maintains.
I had an affair with the most wonderful FPL person ever. And I was... I ghosted her because of as an artifact of my disease at the time. It was like 15 years ago, and she got me my lights back on 1 week after category three. I miss that girl once a week. the point being that was one of them southern meandering conversations. The point being, I have nothing bad to say about FPL at twice the price. They do have their shit together.
Well, you know, we had I don't know if he's still in Florida or not, but you may recall our buddy Jay Cruzen from years back.
Yeah, I remember. I remember the name. Yes.
He was a Florida Power and Light lineman, and he laid out a lot of reality for what. Yeah, I think he was the one who first told me the term King Tide. And used to send me pictures of, you know, Miami Beach being underwater just because it rained.
Well, Florida Power and Light can tell you the truth. They don't have to politic. They did ruin our solar cell thing. And now there's, you know, shit. I'm going to try to be only talk about a couple of things because I'm usually all over the place. I went to downtown Miami this weekend after playing tic-tac-toe with my 5-year-old granddaughter. I love all of the words in it. I'm just going to bask in that. I went, it seemed like a minute ago, the Washington Capitals were playing the Tampa Bay Lightning, and a little baby was being born, and she beat me at tic-tac-toe over the weekend. What do you think about that?
Wow. You didn't let her win?
Of course.
I was going to say.
She understood the game, and she tried to sneak it in. She goes, look, I won, and I just, oh, man. Wow. I was like, I would save the world for this person right here. She doesn't know that I'd bail her out from anything but maybe a capital murder felony. You know, I was just doing that grandpa mess, you know? Where I call grandpa, he'll fix it. Just, I want the world to be okay for her.
See, I can, ever since the 80s, I can never hear tic-tac-toe without a little voice in my mind going, what do you like to play a game?
You know what? I was hacking computers in the 80s, so I kind of lulled it. I really was. That is not hyperbole or exaggeration. I had an FBI visit when I was 16. So. And my mom played it off, Dave Chappelle style. I think I pulled that, so I'll have to expand on it one day. They have long memories, so I don't. True gangsters don't brag about shit or do Zoom calls or post YouTube videos. Or, of course, you know, I always look back because the guy who got caught, he got a government job afterwards because they're like, how are y'all even doing this? The internet doesn't even exist yet. Y'all invented the mesh net. Yeah, we did. Bunch of phone lines to go to do BBS. I did that at 13. The point being, okay, there was a point here. Joe Biden's economy is kicking ass. That's my point. It looked like 1990s, late 1990s, Miami, in downtown Miami. Couldn't get a parking spot, couldn't get an ice water, couldn't get a soda. All the services were depleted. Everything was depleted. Everybody had on their pretty shoes, their pretty dress, their pretty hair. And it was beautiful. I haven't seen anything that sustained in the nightlife business since 2014. So this is seismic.
You're not suggesting that somehow lands on Biden's doorstep, are you?
It has to. And no. It wasn't like this during Trump. Was not like this during Trump. I remember the Trump years. I worked with Trump years.
So,
they were good, but COVID killed everything and then made everything incredibly grimy. But,
all right, so, hold on. If COVID was the cause of it, Joe Biden was not president when Nitwit Nero let COVID run all over the country. COVID did for sure wreck the supply chain and the wreckage is still sorting out, and I guess on an economy of this size, it's going to happen. I mean, it's real. I'll just give you a really weird example. I have a thing for Häagen-Dazs rum raisin ice cream.
Okay.
Can't get it right now, at least not in my Wally world. And never.
You're right. Produce. I haven't seen it in a year. I haven't seen.
Oh, I have. I had it two weeks ago, and I bought the last one. And it still has not restocked. Because I fool around with cosmetics now, I talk to the folks at various stores, and they're like, you know, because there's nothing, believe me, there is nothing more annoying than finding a shade of lipstick or an eyeshadow or a foundation or a tinted moisturizer that works for you, because a lot of them don't. And then the next thing you know, they're never back again. And they've been absolutely hammered. And you can't lay that on Joe Biden's doorstep, because Joe Biden is not the logistics and supply chief of Great Big Corporation of America.
No, I'm doing the opposite of that.
This is fucked up.
Everyone,
this is fucked up freight shipment. I don't know if you noticed, but one of the oldest trucking companies in the country, one that was about to turn 100 years old next year, closed up shop this past Sunday. Yellow. The Yellow Freight Line. They are no more.
I heard they were running like shit, though. I heard they were running like shit. That's what I was reading online.
They were. And
they were bailed. And Trump bailed them out because I guess he was a contributor or something like that, the CEO.
$700 million, an ill-advised bailout during COVID? Yeah.
Yeah, everyone said let them go.
Thing is,
everyone said let them go.
This sucks because those were Teamsters union jobs. A shit ton of them.
Absolutely.
And it got so bad that even the Teamsters looked up and said, it is not our job to save this company for them. And it wasn't. And it isn't. So no more Yellow Freight Lines. And the thing is, Yellow Freight Lines also owned a couple of other major national freight trucking companies. But the thing is, they did what venture capital beasts do. They got the money out of it. They integrated the structure, but then they left the actual infrastructure of the three companies separate. And they destroyed it. They got hammered in 2008 with the recession, and then they got hammered again with COVID. Because you can't ship shit that you can't get. And you know, I don't think we think about how many components of the stuff we buy actually begins in China. It's like I said about the Barbie movie. There was no nefarious international intent to offend China or Vietnam. That little hash-marked line that caused such consternation among big thinkers like Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz was a hash mark showing that Barbies come from China. Because they do. Every cute little Barbie comes from somewhere in China, maybe some 9-year-old chained to a table in Guangdong Free Trade Province.
Do you know what's more important than Barbie? And I know Barbie's your jam, and I'm not being critical. I'm not pointing.
No, I just thought that was a good example.
This is pointing critical eye over at Ted Cruz's little kids cable. You know, the one with the wobbly plastic legs and the weird stains and that weird smell and the weird newsprint that's been like kind of burned into it. That table. To kind of hide what they were doing to the middle class, they did some China fuckery. I know Reagan did it. I don't know what it was, but that set us on the path that we are now. Because when that conversation started, I know most Chinese people didn't have shoes. And now, if you make toothpaste here, the cap for the toothpaste is $8,000 away, which is retarded. Because some motherfucker said, oh, I could save a penny on 1,000 of these.
Oh, sure.
We need some greater good legislation. It needs to be reflected in tax structure. I know that little kid's table has been decimating tax structure for years, but shit, corporations are global at this point. Any country they touch down is make them pay taxes. It's a global problem.
Right, but I think back, I think it was probably 2009, I had a conversation with like a highfalutin academic accountant type in the lounge of a hotel in D.C., or actually across the river in Virginia. And he was relaxed enough. He said, oh, no, most people don't know. Profits are made on the 13th decimal point. And he kept the 13th decimal point, you know, and I'm sitting there going, tenths, hundredths, thousandths, ten thousandths, hundred thousandths, millionth, 10 millionth, 100 millionth, billionth, tenth. So, you know, we're out there in like 1 trillionth of a penny land.
Yeah. No, I know what 13th.
The global economy is so freaking huge. The global economy is so huge that you can make a killing on a 10 trillionth of a penny.
Yep. Yes, you can. Yes, you can.
Because the additive property of mathematics is still the same.
Yeah. that's why crypto is cool if you're in a legitimate project, because you could be a millionaire when it becomes a penny. I mean, literally, when Bitcoin was formed, it was like a millionth of a penny, which is insane. And then I remember it going to a tenth of a penny, then dot two, then one penny, then five pennies, and here we are. That Capital is nothing.
And then I remember we had guys who drove long haul truck, and they would explain, and this was years ago, explained just in time shipping. And then a couple of years ago, Paul from Parts Unknown referenced it, saying, I forget what he called it, just ain't coming shipping. And it was a global capitalist tsunami for which there was no answer, and which the money geniuses had thought would never happen. Oh, it can't happen here. And I need to send thank yous out to George in Course Gold. We now have only $200 to go to qualify for what will be a $600 matching challenge. $200 to go, and that'll get us so we will go from 1345 down to 745 as far as the deficit for July is concerned, and we got about 11 minutes to do that.
I have an interesting and all our slightly darker members of the horn community will understand my joke. Overtown used to be the hoodiest of hoods.
I've heard of it.
A place where you could get stabbed, a place where they said they had racial riots. It was the original segregation zone in South Florida, where they said, all right, black people, just stay over here from all the nice people in South Beach, Miami Beach. You know, this is where you'll work. And then you'll run back on the lines and just, you know, pop up. And that arrangement worked 100 years. Well, it's funny because I'm incorporated 100 years ago. Something like that. Anyways, some timeline like that. We're doing our country, our centennial. So there's a lot of thoughts about what it was like then and now and how. Shit isn't really that different from 100 years ago. 100 years ago is a minute ago, especially geologically. The point being, they gave, if you were in Overtown, you know, that was your space. So I was walking to the train Saturday night coming from Wynwood, which also used to be by Overtown, but Wynwood used to be a ghost town, industrial. Well, now that's a bougie $20 ice cream place. That's where I was like, okay, where's Whole Foods? It's almost complete. So I was walking past this spot where legitimately I normally step over someone, or someone asks you for a cigarette or whatever. And I had a shock. All of a sudden I heard techno. I go, those aren't crackheads smoking. Those are drunk people breaking bottles in the back of a brand new fucking club that must have opened 3 months ago, and it's a grimy LGBT club too. So the music was dopey. I'm looking in the lesbian security guard. She goes, "You good, man? Come on in." I'm like, "Nah, I'm tired. I want to go home. I'm out of weed. That looks fun though." And I made a joke because she was a person of color, skateboard guy. And I said, "How do you know when the gentrification is complete?" She goes, and she looked up too, because she was also from the area. She goes, "How do you know?" She goes, "First nightclub. She died laughing. There wasn't supposed to be a nightclub there. It was supposed to be a home place. Somebody pissing out with beer bottles. Nope. Some of them, look, George, it's a club. We can put this here." And there we go. I've seen this cycle the third time I'm watching it. And it's shit. I was saying, you know, I need to get some real estate down here and get an actual lease, because you'll never see these numbers again. As soon as the clubs show up, then affordability is gone. Because I noticed that, you know, there was a bar where they used to, and all the convenience stores are closed. Those are about to become super people.
Hello? I do.
So it's, for Joe Biden's economy, may be as good as Clinton's. And anybody who's old enough knows what that means. Will he get any credit? Is it up to sing the story? You know, is it up to us to get the formation? Maybe a little bit. Yeah. Joe's not going to do it. I wish he'd go hire some writers. All he can do is just crack Joe, you know, put his ashy feet on the coffee table and just eat peanuts and just have like a camera running. And that goes for because of presidential campaign as he compared to, as he said, you know, like the alternative. Hell, if Joe and, not Joe, if Obama or Michelle wandered in, they started eating popcorn and talking about politics and stuff like that, that would race. That would shrink. That's who we consume our politicians. We don't talk about policy anymore.
Oh, I've got that something. I've got something here for you, Jerry. This is straight out of your neck of the woods. I need to thank Henry and Ralphs. Ralphs jumped back in, and so we are now down to $165 to qualify for a match that winds up being $600 in total. So that's really huge. Thank you, Henry. Thank you, Ralphs. Thank you so much. Now this is from the Miami Herald, and this is so good. I was thinking about your Cuban pizza remark. Fabiola Santiago, writing for the Miami Herald, took a run at Monkey Up's new education standards for Black history, and he pulled no punches. This is some good writing. If Africans kidnapped from their homeland and sold in the Americas as property, people shackled, beaten, raped, and forced to labor dawn to dusk for no pay, benefited from slavery because it taught them job skills, as Florida middle schools will be told, then what are we Cubans whining about? And then this line.
Oh, wow.
Seen in this...
Cuban's coming in. Uh-oh.
Yeah, this Cuban. And he's a Republican Cuban.
I know, but the Cubans have opened their mouths. Everybody stop, light up the cigars. Here it comes. We're in culture now. What do we got? What do we got?
He said, seen in this prism, the Castro brothers did us a favor.
Uh-oh. And, oh, you went first generation. Oh, wow.
And then he cites Jorge Crespo, a Coral Gables Republican who arrived in Miami at 13 on a 1966 Freedom Flight, who said, does it mean that now we have to say gracias, Fidel, for forcing us into exile and being able to learn all these new skills that have enabled us to become successful?
Then Fabio,
we'll get there. Then Fabio Santiago said, in today's Florida, men in pickup trucks can be seen flying the Confederate flag with pride, and in rural towns and cities up north. During a football game in Jacksonville, the cheer is pierced by an anti-Semitic message projected on a building or flown on an airplane's tail. And then this. I mean, he countersunk it with this, Fabiola Santiago did. It's disgusting to deny and whitewash Black history in a state notorious for white racial violence against Blacks, from the massacres of Ocoee and Rosewood to the murder of 17-year-old Trayvon Martin in Sanford. This is a time in history that calls for more awareness of facts, not less, and certainly not sugarcoating. So, yeah, he gets the cowbell. That's the kind of thing that'll give Monkey Up the turtle squirts.
Remember, a lot of his heavy donors are Cuban.
Yeah, that's what I just said.
No, he fucked up. You don't understand what he just did, all right? He allowed the Cubans to go, wait a second, you know we're not really white, you know? That's the only way I can say that. They were drinking the Kool-Aid. But he just broke the spell. He just broke the spell. The entire MAGA spell.
Oh, every person of Cuban heritage is going to see that line, Gracias Fidel.
No, not just Cuban. Ecuadorian.
Yeah, and they'll just, I mean, it'll be nauseating. And then maybe the light will go on. Because I predicted a while back, Jerry.
No, the light is going on. Because the Cubans they make the first moves in the whole.
Well, they're kind of the Republic. For a long time, they've been sort of the Republican shock troops in Florida.
Yeah, for 50 years. For 50 years. They enforced the will. They were Cubans there at the Brooks Brothers riot. They were Cubans that helped JFK become unalived. You know, they've always been a shady shit, you know, with the purview of the government. So the Republicans in the last cycle, in the 18, 20, and 22 cycle, the Republicans have hobbled and cobbled together some Hispanics. They did it with an intrusion into talk radio, local talk radio, and messaging, and they were doing quite well. They had some brown-ass people going, I'm Republican now. I'm like, you don't, really. If you see a guy with a big truck. Anyways, here's the point. The point is, he broke the spell. Because as braggadocious as Cubans like to be, you know, they're racist. You can't eat at the table. You have to come in the back door. Racist, you know, but yeah. They'll still fuck your sister and buy beer and smoke cigars with you as long as nobody's noticing. You know, that kind of racist. Because Cuba's southern too. You understand what I'm saying? Where it gets so hot and so sultry, nobody cares. But it's the same vibe. It really is, just with a Spanish accent. It really is. You got Cuban rednecks as well. Cuban dilettantes and Cuban debutantes. And locals and slack jaw idiots. And you also have some mania. It's just like humanity. The point is, he'd lose the election for Florida today. Fuck the president. He has a problem in Florida.
Let me ask you this then, Jerry, and we're out of time, but just let me ask you this. Everyone talks about how red Florida has become. Is there a possibility of any kind of repentance factor in 2024?
It's going on right now. Did you see that Trump rally that turned into a fight at his arraignment where the guy got arrested? Wearing the old school Monopoly Man go to jail outfit? That was an extra touch. Just so he could run out in front of the president's SUV, and go lock him up. It was classic. It was iconic. He's going to be on a GIF. The point is, Florida never starts the argument, ever. We're distracted. I had a post online. I go, what happens to Miami teams in December? It's historic. It's across all the sports. It's not just, you know, football. But in December, when the weather's like 74 degrees and you got a whole bunch of pretty people in town and there's a bunch of stuff going on and you just had Thanksgiving and you're headed toward New Year's and Christmas and all the religions, because that's the other thing down here. It's so diverse. Everybody has Christmas on a different day. So Christmas in South Florida actually goes to January 15th. You understand?
Yeah, I do.
Because there's, and it's just glorious. It really, what we lack in snow, we gain in emerging traditions. And people, you know, the weather's cooler and people treat each other nice. I don't even know how I ended up on the Christmas story.
No, I get that. Well, I do need to do a couple of quick updates. Thank you so much to Roger. Roger got us down to 115. Thank you, Jude, at Women's Standing. Jude just got us down to 105. So we're $105 away from meeting Kat in Ohio's Mitch McConnell, go home to your Kentucky mansion, and tend to your garden challenge. Thank you again, Kat, and thanks to everyone who's responsible to who's responded to this challenge. One last update, and then I got to go. We started out talking through the program about Devin Archer. I mean, God, it just sounds dramatic. Just Devin Archer, dum dum. Well, a little bit more information is coming out from the interview with him today that both Andy Biggs and Dan Goldman were at. And so, yeah, another source has said, yeah, no, Devin Archer didn't give any evidence at all connecting Joe Biden to any of his son's foreign business dealings. And then said...
He literally...
And another source said... He said that Hunter Biden was selling the illusion of access to his father, but what he was doing was actually saying, I know how D.C. works. So basically, this guy went in, dropped trowel, and just shit all over the massive conspiracy theory that is Hunter Biden, the Benghazi of our time.
Did you see the Tuberville thing?
Which?
The Space Force thing.
No. Which?
Space Force going to Colorado. Colorado.
Yeah, I mean that was kind of on the books for a while, because the Space Force is crawling with LGBTQ people and non-binary people and trans people, because there's so many trans and non-binary people in computers and stuff like that. And so back when...
And rocketry, and space rocketry surgery type stuff. And rocketry surgery, yeah. There's a lot of... It's the Rainbow League and the Lollipop Guild, yes.
And so what... It's been known for a while, back to when Alabama's legislature was passing all of its hateful legislation. There was one woman who testified before the Alabama legislature. She said, and she was Air Force or Space Force. And she said, you know what this is going to do, right? Huntsville ain't getting the headquarters of Space Force as long as y'all do that. And the Republican men of the Alabama legislature barked and grunted and scratched themselves and said, well, I don't think it's going to work like that, little missy. And now, well, they're finding out that the goddess of irony is a mean-ass bitch when she wants to be.
I have a joke for you.
Okay.
I figured out Ron DeSantis' whole thing with Disney.
Yes?
It just hit me. I go, it can't be that simple, can it? I go, that's so stupid. Disney made the Avengers, right?
Marvel, yeah.
Yes. Yeah, Marvel. No, this is not... There's no trickery here. Just keep up. Disney made Black Panther. Other than the birth of Obama and his eventual presidency, American Iron right there. The debut of Black Panther was a moment of Black pride I've ever seen. I think they should show Black Panther on Martin Luther King Day. It literally, or Juneteenth. It is literally that deep. I didn't even know this. I'm a person of color. And I was like, oh, yeah, we've never had anybody cheer about. We're always the bad guy. And there was so much pride, and there was so much Wakanda forever. And the idea of Black people flying around in spaceships, that goes against everything Ron DeSantis hates. Here we are. Wakanda. That's what this is about. There's more, but I think that was a cat. Just woke agenda. Woke. That Black people actually have value and purpose. Not we have to scrape them out somewhere. Hey, look, we told them how to be a blacksmith. Oh, you motherfucker. I could spit in his face. I literally could.
That's not entirely out there. All right, well, Jerry, I got to go. Good okay. Beginning to the week. Good beginning to the week. That was quick. Take care. Thank you, Emilio. Thank you so very much. And thank you to Terry. Challenge met. That is astonishingly wonderful. So we got a lot closer than I dared dream we would in terms of having July fully funded. We're only 725 away from July being fully funded, so maybe that won't make August quite so hard. Thank you. Thank you. My eternal thanks to you all who responded to Kat's challenge, and thank you to Kat for the Have a Show on Me challenge. Thank you. So that's it. Thank you to our Patreon and PayPal subscribers. I did neglect to do one thing, and I will do that now, because it is the final broadcast day of the month. And that is, on the last broadcast day of the month, we say thank you to our Patreon subscribers. And yeah, you're right, Randy, I need to get that photo off of there and figure out how to get something more appropriate up. Because, old guy. Ugh. But thank you to our Patreon subscribers. I hate how they changed the way that... Just one second. Oh, this is frustrating. There we go. Thank you so much to Theo in Oregon. Thank you to Randy Radar. Thank you to Christopher. Thanks, Troy. Thanks to Janice. Thank you to David up in Oregon. Thank you, Eve. Thank you, Jake. Thank you, Nancy. Thank you, Bernadette. Thank you to Michael of the Guffins. Thank you to Jeff Inslow. Thank you, Kay. Thank you, Andrea. Thank you, James. Thank you, Aaron. Thank you, Annette. Thank you, Joanne. Thank you, Lori. Thank you, Vernon in San Diego. Thank you to Kat in Ohio. Thank you, Brendan. Thank you, KW. Thank you, Barb. Thank you, Horst in Taiwan. Thank you, Robin. Thank you to Terrace. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. And thank you. Thank you so much to Jeremy. Thanks, one and all, for being partial sponsors of the program. Thank you to our PayPal subscribers. Thank you to our a la carte contributors and our challenge makers. Thank you. Thanks to each and every one of you who shares your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. It means the world. It means the existence of this program, if not the world. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you, Roger, in the chat room. Thank you to Steve. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Remember, like and subscribe to the podcast, however you take it, whatever platform, because it does, with a click, it helps to grow the program and make it findable, more findable, for more people. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia, and a proud union shop. If you want to see some of the work that Coal River Mountain Watch does, there's a news story from the Charleston Gazette Mail on my Facebook page, and you can see how fearlessly members of Coal River Mountain Watch do speak truth to power. Please stay safe. Get your booster if you're eligible. Wear your mask if you're around maggots. They don't care about anybody but themselves, and they don't care much about themselves. Old 999 Herb Cain taught us that. Wash your hands, don't touch your face, use your hand sanitizer, carry it with you, pocket or purse. Maintain your social distance. And if some guy with a really, really abnormally huge head and no brain to match comes babbling at you talking about, oh, Devin Archer's going to be devastating. He's going to destroy the Biden crime family. Well, avoid that strange person like the plague, because he is. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later.